Hello there once again, everyone. Welcome to That SEC Podcast, your SEC podcast. I am Cody McClure, and I am joined by Michael Bratton, SEC Mike, as always. Fun weekend. Once again, SEC football, some surprising results and some, I guess you could say, not so surprising results, but boy, was it fun. We're going to get right into it. Mike, what's going on, man?
Hey, Cody, I'm just so thankful that I'm not a Kentucky fan. I don't think I could manage to be a Wildcat fan right now after the one-point loss at Florida. Now the streak is at 31, obviously, and it just, at this point, there's no end in sight.
Yeah, you know, I said after that game Saturday night when they lost to Florida, the way that they lost, I mean, to be up two scores in the fourth quarter, 27-14, and to lose the game 28-27, which, of course, we've seen that before from Tennessee a couple years ago, same exact score. But, man, what a heartbreaker. And I'm not a Kentucky fan either, but I tweeted last night, you know, my sympathy right now is with Big Blue Nation because it does not get much more painful than that.
No, I mean, they just handed them the game. You know, I don't know how that happens, leaving – a receiver completely uncovered. One of them was on fourth down after a timeout. It's just, it's inexcusable. And, you know, one was obviously on the goal line. It was the defining play of the game. And, you know, just so much momentum going into that game. That's literally the most painful way I think it could have ended.
Yeah, I mean, to leave those receivers wide open and then the holding call. Did you get a chance to go back and look at that?
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with that call. It's a tough call to make. To, you know, you don't want to say it cost them the game, even though it likely did. But you know, you just can't you know, sumo ref a, like, take a guy down with that few seconds on the clock. You know, it was just unnecessary. And I mean, even if Kentucky gets no yards there, I think it was a much more manageable kick had the guy not held on that play.
Yeah, I mean, that was the ultimate decider, because I really feel like Austin McGinnis, as good as a kicker as he is, I feel like he makes a chip shot any other way, because he's not going to miss it left or right. So,
I thought he had it when it was 56, 57, whatever it was, the final kick. He just and then, you know, in pure Kentucky, Florida fashion, I mean, it looked like it was about 3 or 4 yards short. He just missed the distance, but he was almost right down the center.
So close, man. So close to getting the job done. And, you know, you're right about the holding call. It was the right call. I mean, he basically tackled the guy to the ground. I don't know. Something in me just kind of wishes that it hadn't been called.
I know. You know, obviously, another game somewhat similar. Texas A&M beat Arkansas 50-43. I believe that streak's at 6 now, but... I mean, that pales in comparison.
yeah, man. It's 6 in a row now for Kevin Sumlin over the Hogs. I mean, it's crazy.
Did you see, I don't know if you saw this, but Bielema was, he was shedding tears in the post-game press conference.
Is he worried about losing his job? I imagine that's probably got something to do with it.
Well, he was just kind of going on about how his players, you know, they try so hard and they work so hard and, you know, this won't break him and whatnot, but... It seemed like it broke Bielema there for a moment.
Well, you know, Bielema's a good guy. I mean, I like Bielema, but he's not going to be a long-term. I don't know how much longer he will be in Fayetteville. I do wonder, because of his buyout and because of the fact that, you know, it's Arkansas we're talking about. I don't think there's quite as much pressure there. I do wonder when a move will be made, but you got to think it's probably going to be sometime this season.
Yeah, and speaking of post-game tirades, I don't know if you caught Barry Odom's display he had after the Auburn game, but...
I did. That was great.
I mean, they got blown out at home by Auburn, 51-14. In the post-game press conference, he's talking about, you know, he was the only one there the last, you know, when they were a solid foundation of a team, and he knows what it takes, and, you know, Gary Pinkel needed time, he's going to need time, he knew what he was getting into, and he's the right guy for the job, but... you know, I like that fire and passion. He does seem like he truly cares, but at the same time, it seems like, you know, less than a handful of games into his second season, he's already pleading for his job.
See, I really liked what he said after the game. I feel like he, that more than anything, I think that was a message, not just to the fans and the media, but I think it was a message to his players too. I really think that was, you know, because he knows those players will hear what he said, mm-hmm. and I feel like they're going to respond. They're going into a bye week now, and I think that they'll kind of, I don't know how to look in the mirror, maybe, I don't know how to put it, but I think that might have been kind of an underlying message to his players as well. But, you know, I think Barry Odom, I don't know that he's pleading for his job at this point, because you got to think he's going to be there a while, right? I mean, I don't think his seat is all that hot, do you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know if they're going to win another game here. I've talked to Missouri people. They're kind of questioning if they're going to beat UConn and Idaho at this point, just based on what they've seen. Now, you know, if they win those games, he should be safe. But if he loses both of them, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Missouri job is that desirable right now with all the issues that, you know, that campus has been having the last couple years. I don't really know if they can afford to fire a coach and bring in a whole new staff. But, you know, that's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, Missouri, I think there's a possibility. Like, I'm not ready. I mean, they look terrible, don't get me wrong. But I don't want to just completely write them off yet, because last year they had kind of a similar situation when you look at their first few games. I mean, they went through a stretch there where they lost 42-7 to LSU. They lost 40-14 to Florida, mm-hmm. got beat by MTSU, got beat by two scores by Kentucky and South Carolina. And then, you know, I mean, teams get better as the season goes along. Missouri was terrible last year. They were 4-8. But you look at, you know, two of their last three, they did beat Vanderbilt and Arkansas. So this team looks awful. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they look like a whole different kind of bad. But, you know, down the stretch, who knows? I mean, they could maybe get a couple of upset wins towards the end of the year.
Speaking of looking bad, I don't know how much of the LSU game you caught, but I just watched it back again, and goodness, that offense is dreadful. They scored 35 points, which is, you know, it's respectable, but a lot of the first play of the game, they intercepted a Syracuse pass and took it to the one, so there's one touchdown. They got a touchdown right before half on essentially a two-yard slant that went about 60 yards. You know, outside of that, they were really lacking in big plays, and I don't know, Syracuse, they were a few missed opportunities away from just walking into Death Valley and getting a win.
LSU is bad right now. You know, I did watch part of that game, and I was reading up on Orgeron's post-game comments and just basically what he was saying about it. And I think the story there is LSU, they're just getting outmanned up front right now. And that's not something that you see very often from LSU, but their offensive line can't block. Their defensive line has been plagued with injuries, and the defense is starting to wear thin here already. Just, you know, what are we, 4 weeks into the season? So they've got big problems in the trenches. And as you know, I mean, they're about to get into a stretch here where, you know, we talked about it all offseason, maybe the toughest stretch of games in the country. So I think you're right. I think LSU's got big problems.
Before they even get to that, they hit up the Cody McClure upset special. Welcome Troy next week. So I got my fingers crossed. I hope you get that one right.
Well, yeah, I haven't been getting much else right lately. So I don't know about that one. Speaking of, you know, me not getting things right, I totally cursed the Mississippi State football program for eternity. Mm-hmm. I told you last week I was going to ride. I was riding that train straight into the mountainside, and that's what happened. Georgia just worked them on Saturday.
Yeah, and anytime you know, a team goes into a hostile environment and gives up a touchdown immediately, that's almost a death knell. And it was in this game. They never recovered from that opening play. It was a flea flicker touchdown, just totally caught Mississippi State flat footed. And just from there, it was essentially the floodgates. They, you know, Mississippi State couldn't get anything going on offense. They made the Bulldogs one dimensional, and you know, Mississippi State just doesn't have the receivers and to do anything against a good defense.
Georgia looked great. Auburn looked great. How about Alabama going into Nashville and just that is the most complete game I've seen Alabama play in probably, I don't know, maybe since that 49-10 win over Tennessee last year.
Yeah, and it's clear, you know, they didn't make any mention of it leading up to the week, which I guess is typical of a Saban-led program. But, I mean, the day after, I'm hearing former players, current players, Bo Scarborough came out, and the official Alabama, they had like a hype recap video, and they were all, the message was, you know, we don't talk, we just do it on the field. And you know, I think Vanderbilt's, you know, awoke a sleeping giant, and the rest of the SEC is going to have to pay the price.
That's what happens, man. They are so good at, I don't know how to put it, so good at being motivated, I guess. You know, the one thing you do not do to them is give them the bulletin board material, because, I think, you know, people might wonder if that's kind of overplayed, like how much does that really matter? But, I mean, you just look time and time again, when teams have come at Alabama talking noise, they just clobber them. I mean, that's what happens. And those players responded, Saban responded. I mean, they took a knee on the goal line. It should have been 66-0. I mean, you know, if they wanted to, they probably could put up about 80.
Mm-hmm.
But Saban doesn't typically do that. You know, the most points he's ever scored at Alabama is, what, I think 62. And he usually doesn't go into the 60s if he doesn't have to. So
yeah, this tied the biggest SEC win of his Alabama career. I believe in 2014 they beat Texas A&M 59-0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aside from learning that Vanderbilt just, you know, a lot of people mentioned this, but it was clear from the get-go they don't have the athletes or the physicality that Alabama does. I think my main takeaway from this one was, you know, we got to see the backup Tua Tagovailoa, however you say his name.
That's close.
that's my best attempt yet, but
I knew who you were talking about.
So, I mean, he went 8-for-10 for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. He looked outstanding. You know, obviously I don't think they're going to bench Jalen Hurts, but I think the main takeaway from Alabama from this game is if they need him, he looks ready to lead them to an SEC title if need be.
So Alabama has depth. Big surprise there. Man. You know, that's one spot they've never really had it, though, quarterback.
Right.
And now they do. So, yeah, just an unbelievable performance by Alabama. And then a couple of games that we haven't mentioned yet, just a couple of lowly, pathetic SEC East performances. First of all, South Carolina, at least they played a halfway decent team in Louisiana Tech, snuck out a miracle there, 17-16. And how about Tennessee? UMass came into Knoxville, should have won the game. I mean, they outplayed Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, talking about these two games, it's very interesting, the narratives coming out, because, you know, Butch Jones is his fifth year. This is a team that's supposed to dominate teams like this. And, you know, the narrative is, you know, panic mode. You know, he's on his way out. And Tennessee is going to get rolled next week when they welcome Georgia. And you look at South Carolina, Will Muschamp is in his second year. You know, they shouldn't really be in contest with Louisiana Tech quite like they were. They were lucky to win this game thanks to some heroics by Jake Bentley and a kicker who had never made a kick. They ended up winning by 1 point. But, you know, I think that was a very valuable lesson for that team. And I think that's, you know, these are the close games that a program like this could very well lose, and just winning these marquee games, I think it does a lot for South Carolina. I don't think the win over UMass does anything for Tennessee.
No, I was going to say there, you were talking about how it builds a program and everything. And I was hoping, I was like, you are talking about South Carolina, right? Because Tennessee, there's just nothing you can take from that one. I mean, yeah, John Kelly looked good. He always does. Brandon Johnson, the slot receiver, came out, played really well, had 123 yards catching the ball, but just ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. You know, even the thing is, when you play a team like that, winless UMass, right? 0-4 coming in, had lost to Coastal Carolina, Old Dominion, like horrible teams.
Mm-hmm.
When you come into a noon game like that, I understand the recipe. It's early. You're coming off a tough loss to Florida. You're probably looking ahead to Georgia. I mean, the combination is there for you to have kind of a sluggish performance. But even a sluggish performance, a good team beats that UMass team by 17 to 21 points. I mean, even if you're sluggish, even if it's a bad day, you should not be having a 17-13 game with the Minutemen.
No, no, it'll be fascinating to see, you know, how that translates to the next week. And, you know, since we're already talking about it, let's just get into it with the opening lines.
My favorite part of the week.
Now, since we're already on that game, we might as well start with it. Georgia travels to Tennessee. Georgia looks outstanding. Tennessee looks terrible at this point. Let's see. You guessed the line would be Georgia 8.5. I said Georgia 7, and it opened at Georgia 7.
Really? Look at you balling out here. Did you set it up on purpose to do that one first, didn't you?
I didn't, but I actually did call that immediately after the Tennessee game. I just, you know, I said as long as Georgia beats Mississippi State as I thought they would, you know, that line right at 7 sounds about right to me.
Yeah, smart pick. I just thought it would open a little bit higher and continue to rise. Do you think it will continue to go up from 7?
I do, but you know, not by much. These two have played such, you know, tight games. These are both public teams. There's no way. I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, I mean, people I guess don't know what they're talking about, but they're saying, you know, 14 to 20 points. That's ridiculous because, I mean, 7 points has been the largest margin of victory, and I believe it was Tennessee winning by 7 2 years ago. The previous two that Georgia won, they won each by 3 points. So these are teams that are very familiar with each other. They obviously play each other every year. There's not going to be a ton of surprises in this game.
It actually dates back all the way to 2011. This game has been decided by one possession. That 2011 game was an 8-point game. But that was a good Georgia team compared to a bad Tennessee team. Same situation in 2013. Tennessee is always able to play Georgia close. I do wonder about this one, though, Mike, to be honest with you, because, you know, I hate to just buy straight into the narrative because everybody thinks that Georgia's just going to come in and blow Tennessee out. And my first reaction is similar to yours. This series has been so close, I just don't see that happening. But I mean, based on the results I've seen on the field, this is going to be a tough one for me to pick because Georgia has been dominant in what it has done through four games, and Tennessee has been, I don't even know if you can say mediocre, below average at best.
Yeah, I think the main, you know, thing we need to pay attention to heading into this game, which quarterback plays for Georgia. I think it's pretty clear at this point they're going to roll with Jake Fromm, the true freshman. But maybe they go with Eason. You know, I've seen a lot of people talking, you know, they need to roll with Fromm the rest of the way. I honestly would go with Eason if he's healthy. I think he's better than people are giving him credit for. I think Fromm is a very good player at this point. He's not a difference maker. And I think going into an environment like this that he's never handled, I think that could be cause for concern for Georgia there.
Yeah, and that's worth noting because this will be by far the toughest environment that he's been in because Notre Dame, you know, say what you will. I mean, storied program, great program for sure. But the fan support, it's not nearly as loud as Neyland Stadium and Georgia. That was mostly Georgia fans there, you know. That was kind of a special kind of a game. So you're not going to see that on Saturday. You're going to see nothing but orange for the most part. So.
And you know, that is tough. As hot as Georgia looks, you know, coming into this game, if they were to lose it with Fromm playing quarterback, I think there's going to be some serious, serious question marks as to who the quarterback should be moving forward. And that kind of division, that could derail this team really quick. They're only 1-0 in SEC play, so they've still got a long way to go.
Yeah, still a long season, and I always try to keep that in mind. You know, we don't want to look too much into what's happened through just 4 weeks because, you know, these things typically play out totally like we don't expect. So Georgia could still end up 8-4. I don't know. But anyway, moving on.
All right. So this, how about Eastern Michigan at Kentucky? You thought it would be Kentucky minus 12. I said Kentucky minus 16, and it opened at Kentucky minus 14. So we tied on that one.
Okay, so we split it down the middle, I guess. I thought it would be closer, and you thought it would be a little more. So, once again, though, hey, we're close. So I guess 14's about right.
And here's the Cody McClure upset special. Troy at LSU. You're riding with that Troy pick, I see. It's you guessed LSU minus 14.5. I said LSU minus 17, and it opened at LSU minus 21.
Really? 21 whole points, huh?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's obviously the public is going to go with LSU on that one. I don't think they realize how good of a team Troy has. I believe they're 3-1 right now. They've beaten some quality teams. If LSU's, you know, not careful, this could be much closer than they want it to be.
Yeah, I was going to say the public sucks. I'm going all in on the Troy Trojans here. My special of the week. Hey, I picked Mississippi State last week, and you saw what happened, right? So, Troy Trojans going all in this week. They've beaten the Alabama State Hornets this year. Big win. Beat New Mexico State on the road in Las Cruces, New Mexico. They beat Akron by 5. This is a pretty solid Troy team. Only losses to Boise State, and they had to go all the way to Idaho for that. So I fully expect them to go into Baton Rouge and get a W on Saturday.
All right. Good luck with that.
Yeah, sure.
All right, now New Mexico State at Arkansas. You guessed Arkansas minus 14.5. I said Arkansas minus 13, and it opened at Arkansas minus 17. So this is the first one of the week that you've gotten right.
Okay, so I'm just a little bit closer on that one. So right now you've got me down 2-1, and we've got a tie, right?
Right. And, okay. You know, I was thinking Arkansas, you know, man, they put everything they had into that Texas A&M game and came up short yet again. This is going to be very interesting how they respond. I'll be really curious to see how many fans show up to this game. You know, it sounds like a large percentage of the fan base is ready to move on from Bielema. I don't think the school is ready to do so, but this is just going to be an interesting one.
Well, you know, for the sake of having a little bit of knowledge, when you sent me the lines this morning, and like I said, I'll just reiterate like I do every week, I never even look at these. So when we do the podcast, as we are recording, as we speak, it's always a surprise for me. That's why I said it's my favorite time of the week. But so usually, just so the people know, like you send me the lines every Sunday morning, or you send me your guesses for the games, mm-hmm. and then I send you back my guesses, and then the lines come out a few hours later, and we do this like we're doing right now to see how close we were. So anyway, this morning when you sent me over the games, I hadn't even looked at the schedule for next week. So I tried to do a little bit of due diligence and look into that New Mexico State team. That's not a bad football team, honestly. They blew out UTEP. I mentioned they lost that close game to Troy, who's a pretty good middle-of-the-road program. They beat New Mexico. Their only other loss, a 6-point loss to Arizona State, who just gave Oregon everything that they wanted on Saturday. So, actually, they beat Oregon 37-35. So, it's not a bad football team, New Mexico State. I think Arkansas still wins comfortably.
Yeah, and one thing, you know, for Razorback fans out there to be somewhat concerned about, this New Mexico team... New Mexico State. I don't know the name of the offensive coordinator, but I've researched a little bit of what he's done. I'm a big fan of Chris B. Brown of Smart Football, and he's kind of in love with this offensive coordinator. He does a lot of very innovative things. You're going to see as many as 4 and 5 guys in the backfield. They run, you know, a spread option. You know, it's crazy what you're going to see. You at times you'll see 3 people lined up behind the quarterback in the shotgun, and you just never know where the ball's going. This is some really wacky stuff they're running out there, but it's working really well for them. So this is going to be somewhat of an interesting game here.
Yeah, but we still like Arkansas by a couple of scores, right? Could end up being closer though.
Yeah, I mean, if they've given up, which I don't think a Brett Bielema coach team will, but we'll just have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, should be interesting.
Okay, Vanderbilt coming off the whipping of the year. They're traveling to Gainesville to take on Florida. You thought the line would be Florida minus 4.5. I said Florida minus 6, and it actually opened at Florida minus 10.5. So I got that one.
Oh, my gosh. Damn.
Yeah, that one is a bit of a surprise to me. I think... You know, had Vanderbilt not been coming off such a beatdown from Alabama that was nationally televised, I think, let's say this game takes place a week earlier, I think Vanderbilt probably would have been the favorite.
Gosh, I am just stunned by that. Just sticking daggers in me left and right here. I just don't think that's got to be. I mean, there's no way that Florida team beats Vanderbilt by 10, right?
Yeah, I mean, Florida's offense may not score 10 against Vanderbilt.
They are inept.
Last year it was a 13-6 game. I believe the year before it was also a one-score game. This is clearly the best Vanderbilt team under Derek Mason. This looks to be the worst Florida team under Jim McElwain. This is going to be interesting. And, you know, they've already pulled Felipe Franks. Luke Del Rio looked competent, but at the same time, he is, I mean, you know what you're getting with him. He's like a worse Danny Etling. So I don't know. This is going to be an interesting game.
Well, they need to go ahead and pull that line, or I'm going to end up putting my life savings on it, because I mean, that is shocking to me. Maybe I'm overblowing this, but yeah, I'm just going back and looking at the series results the last few years. Three of the last four, I mean, Vandy won one of those. The mm-hmm. other two have been decided by 7 and then 2 points in 2015. There was one blowout, 2014. But I mean, for the most part, this has been a close series.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing you've got to be concerned about, Kyle Shermer, the Vanderbilt quarterback, he's never played in an atmosphere like Gainesville. So, you know, those fans could be kind of fired up. Seems like Florida has some life. So that would be my only concern there. Maybe if he throws a pick six or two, I mean, the floodgates could open at that point. But barring some catastrophe by him, which he looked pretty poor against Alabama, I think you're pretty safe with a double-digit spread in this one.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about, like, I understand all that, you know, it's on the road, and that will be tough. Gainesville's a tough place to play, but I just don't want to put too much into that Alabama game, because that Alabama team could beat most – they would beat Florida, I think, by a similar score. I mean, the last time they played, they beat them, what, 54-16? So – you know, I just think Alabama is that much better than the SEC. But, of course, I've thought that all along. I don't know. Just really shocked by that line. I expect it to go down, and I also expect to win money on it, because I'm going Vandy all day there.
Well, Vandy plus 10. And the one last thing on that game, you know, the one concern I would have for the Commodores is a potential, you know, I haven't done the research completely to study this, but there's, you know, people believe the perception that after you play Alabama, you know, your body's worn down and you kind of have a letdown. I know 2 years ago, Tennessee took Alabama to the wire and they lost that game and they won 6 in a row. So it doesn't always hold true. It seems to hold true for LSU. But so that's the only other concern I would have. But I don't think this – 4 games in the season, Vanderbilt's going to fall apart after playing Alabama.
Yeah, I need you to be the voice of reason here and talk me off down from these ledges, because last week it was Mississippi State, and I rode with them all week, and now I think I'm going to ride with Vandy all week. So,
well, like I said, 10.5 is just so much for Florida to cover right now with that offense.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, moving on, I guess.
Okay, South Carolina travels to Texas A&M this week. You guessed the line would be Texas A&M minus 6. I said Texas A&M minus 2. I thought it would be much closer, and it opened at Texas A&M minus 11. So you win this one.
Really? 11? Okay. Well, that's quite a bit more than I thought it would. Yeah, I just I think A&M is a little bit underrated. And I say that because they got the win over Arkansas. Once they got to that second half against Louisiana, they really did take care of business against a team that they were better than. Mm-hmm. I think they've really gotten things going the last couple of weeks. And you got to remember, that UCLA game, I realize they sacrificed that lead, but they were at least good enough to be up 44-10 in that game. So I think that Texas A&M is probably better than people think. Not to say I think Kevin Sumlin will be there much longer, but I do expect A&M to – I'm not surprised that they are favored substantially over South Carolina. I wouldn't have gone 11, but I'd call it a touchdown or so.
Yeah, South Carolina's offense just looked pitiful without Debo Samuel. You know, we touched on it briefly. They needed essentially a 60-yard drive with 20 seconds left in the game to get in field goal position to beat Louisiana Tech. So South Carolina's got a lot of issues on the offensive side of the ball. They can't really run the ball. But 11 points, you know, that's a lot to give up. I could see Jake Bentley with a backdoor cover maybe cutting the final lead to 10 in the closing seconds. That would be my main concern in this one.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not going to bet on it. I would never bet on A&M to do anything, but I'm not all that surprised with the line, though.
All right, Ole Miss, coming off a bye, they travel to Alabama. You thought the line would be Alabama 24.5. I said Alabama minus 23, and it opens at Alabama minus 28.
28, okay. See, I thought about going higher, but I just kept thinking, you know, it's an SEC game. They're not going to make it over 24. And turns out they did. I think that's probably a good number. And honestly, from what we've seen from Ole Miss, I mean, they struggled to move the ball or to put up points against Cal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cal, coached by Justin Wilcox now, I think their defense is pretty good. Ole Miss has had 2 weeks to prepare for this game, but it's in Tuscaloosa. Bama's on fire. I tell you what, I like Bama to cover that, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of points. I still think it should be closer to 24-25. It'll be interesting to see if A.J. Brown plays coming off the bye. You know, the Ole Miss team, they just lost a lot of momentum once he left the game. But I think there's a bit of a blueprint there. Cal showed how to slow down Ole Miss by rushing instead of coming off the tackles, coming right up the gut. And that really messed with Shea Patterson. He's a smaller quarterback. He's only about 6'1". So I think it's really hard for him to make his reads when he's got guys in his face. So look for Alabama to follow that recipe. And, you know, I don't know. I kind of lead towards Ole Miss in this one, but we'll see as the week goes on.
Well, luckily, Alabama doesn't have the caliber of players to rush the middle like Mighty Cal does. So, I think Alabama's going to feast on Ole Miss, I think, because you think you like Ole Miss to cover in this one?
Yeah, at this point, I really want to, you know, see if A.J. Brown is ready to go before I make a final call. But, I think that's plenty of points for Ole Miss to cover in my mind.
Well, you could very well be right. I guess the thing I'm looking at, I mean, Ole Miss has had the recipe, right? If any team last couple of years has been able to hang with Alabama, it's been Ole Miss. But this is just a different kind of Ole Miss team. No Chad Kelly there, obviously, the big thing, I think. But and also no coach. But I think that Alabama will feast on Ole Miss because of that reason, because the hatred there for what Ole Miss did to them, you know, what, two of the last 3 years now, mm-hmm. and had them down at 24-3 last year, I think, or 24-7. So I really expect Ole Miss to come out and really just get clobbered by Alabama.
All right, the final game of the week here. Mississippi State, your Mississippi State Bulldogs travel.
No, not anymore.
You're off them?
Yeah, totally disowned them.
Okay, the disowned Mississippi State Bulldogs travel to Auburn. Let's see, you thought the line would be Auburn minus 6. I said Auburn minus 6.5, and it actually opened at Auburn minus 9.
Okay, well, I was hoping you would say it was 6 or 6.5, so it was like we were both dead on there, but but we weren't. So Auburn minus 9, interesting.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, Auburn, again, you know, we kind of talked about this on a previous episode, you know, don't hit the panic button. You know, they were going up against maybe the best team in the nation in Clemson and at Clemson's house, and they barely lost that game, and, you know, they played terrible on offense. If they can get that thing going, I still think there's a chance Auburn is the SEC's best team. They've got a fantastic defense. I think they've got maybe the best quarterback, you know, throwing wise in the league. They've got some great running backs. Kerryon Johnson scored 5 touchdowns against Missouri. This is a dangerous team, and I think there's a serious potential here for Mississippi State to kind of their whole balloon get burst here and get blown out by Auburn.
You said you think that Auburn could be still the best team in the SEC, and I look at Auburn and I think that I think you're on to something. I think that Auburn is still really good. I mean, that Clemson team they lost to, obviously, if not the best team, number one or number two in the country there with Alabama. So the thing that's tough for Auburn, I think we're going to learn a lot because they have to play Georgia every year, and it just so happens that Georgia is the East team this year, the only East team that's really worth a damn. So Auburn playing Georgia and Alabama toward the end of the year, things are going to get really fun in November.
Yeah, unless Gus Malzahn gets fired for losing to Mississippi.